The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money. What if your financial goals and your deepest convictions were perfectly in sync? Welcome to episode 92 of Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF. AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built from a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio. You know, we're surrounded by so-called financial advice every day, but how much of it actually helps you become who God wants you to be? Today, we're bridging that gap between your bank account and your heart's calling.
And how much of that advice is actually advice?
Right.
Or just stuff.
Or just noise.
Yeah. Well, you know, each week we break down some of the headlines, the financial news headlines out there, hopefully with clarity and focus, right? But that's just the beginning. We'll spend the rest of our time diving deep into principles and practical strategies that help you manage your wealth with a clear conscience and a kingdom focus. And as always, we're going to see if we can stump you with our weekly trivia later in the show.
And we got another good one this week.
Do we?
Mm-hmm.
It's my favorite part.
But first, let's look at what's happening in the markets and the world around us in our week in review.
Oh, there is so much stuff going on in the market. It's hard to figure out what to focus on, right?
But I had to turn the TV off.
You had to turn the TV off, yeah. You know, because as we're recording it feels like the world is blowing up.
Well, some regions are.
Some regions are. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
So, big conflict going on in Iran, and that is having ripple effects in global markets. Last summer, I think, we were talking about, you know, supply chain issues and how one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another, right? An economy is just a series of transactions.
That's right.
And a global economy is just a series of transactions all around the world.
Mm-hmm. And these little shipping lanes can be so important. Because I know we talked a lot about the Strait of the Suez Canal.
Mm-hmm.
Now in the news is the Strait of Hormuz.
Strait of Hormuz. That's mm-hmm. right. So apparently the Strait of Hormuz is 21 miles wide. Right, so it is not as big thing. Now, 21 miles is wide enough that I wouldn't want to swim across it.
Or can.
That's right.
But it's a choke point.
But it is a choke point,
definitely.
Right? Well, it becomes a choke point when 20% of the world's oil passes through that 21-mile...
20 wide, million barrels of oil per day.
Per day.
Mm-hmm.
Per day. Now, apparently, 90% of that is headed towards Asia.
Ah,
right.
Okay.
So, China apparently imports 40% of their oil from that source.
So, they're probably not too happy about this either.
They're not big exposure. That's right. But then India and Japan. So, you have China, India, and Japan. There's other countries in Asia besides China, India, and Japan. But those
are some big ones.
The three big. Economies that really depend on oil that is passing through the Strait of Hormuz. So, you know, really what impact does the current interruption have, right? Well, investors tend to buy stocks in anticipation of earnings.
Sure.
And in order to have earnings, companies need to be able to function.
And bring in some money.
That's right. And if the oil doesn't flow, they can't function as well, and the profits could be in jeopardy, and so investors are reacting, right? And prices are fluctuating up and down.
And not just, you know, reacting emotionally, right, of what could happen. I mean, this is tangible increases.
Tangible stuff. That's right. Yeah. Now, you know, so a cascading issue, 20 million barrels a day usually goes through, and boom, all of a sudden that just stops.
Yeah.
Right? So what happens to the places where then oil was being produced? You know, first when oil is produced,
it's a domino effect, right?
It goes into storage, and then from the storage, it goes on a ship, and that pipeline, no pun intended, just flows, right? But now, very close to home, it's not flowing anymore. So the storage facility quickly fills up.
And they can't move it.
And they can't move it. So what do producers do when they run out of storage space? They cut production. Well, I'll tell you what, when that pipeline empties out, the longer the situation persists, right? If the pipeline is empty and production winds down a little bit, it's going to take a while to ramp it back up again.
Yeah.
So you don't just turn it on and off.
It's not as easy as a light switch.
Right. So risk probably around the globe is that the longer the situation persists, the more likely it is that there is an extended economic impact.
Across the board for all types of folks, right?
Mm-hmm.
The folks shipping it, the insurance costs, the costs that'll trickle down to consumers.
That's right. Yeah. So make sure your portfolio is diversified well. Make sure you're working with a financial advisor who understands these kinds of issues. And we spend a lot of time talking with our clients and talking them through, situations like this. But this is a really, really big deal. So let's stay tuned. And one other thing on that before we move on to another point. Liquefied natural gas, LNG, right? A lot of LNG flows through the Strait of Hormuz, and then it makes its way over to Europe.
Right.
So now what happens is that it's much easier with all the blockage there. It's much easier, any LNG that makes it through, it's easier to head east. So all of a sudden, Europe, which gets a lot of LNG from that part of the world, is now suddenly in competition with China, Japan, and India, who are now consuming the LNG that maybe used to make its way over to Europe.
Makes it harder for them to get, makes their prices spike.
That's right.
And I heard it's even some of their highest prices since 2022.
That's right. And it didn't just kind of start inching its way there. Oil prices did not just start inching their way up. Boom, went
right
overnight.
Mm-hmm. So that's a shock to the
that is
the
called
system.
A shock. That's right. Mm-hmm. It's a price shock. It's an event shock. So
and it's not just energy, right? There's other goods, and even all that LNG, let's see, whether it goes east to Asia or goes around the Horn of Africa, still going to be more time of shipping, more costs going in.
That's right.
And, you know, things coming around, electronics, automotive parts,
there could be
a lag in all that coming over.
And I already had a lag, right? You remember last year?
Transmission?
Transmission in my pickup truck. I sat for 5 months waiting for a new transmission. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, but that's exactly right. So the ripple effect is there, and this sort of ties in, well, the ripple effect. But you know, again, one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. If you don't get anything out of our discussion of events, always remember that when something happens, there's always a cause and effect. Right?
Absolutely.
Because one thing happens, then something else happens, then something else happens, and something else, and eventually you have...
But as investors, we just look at those as doors of opportunity,
doors,
right?
Well, we
Some
can.
Some may close, but then others may open.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Opportunity and risk. Risk and opportunity.
Risk and reward.
That's right. So we talk about different topic, right? We talk about manufacturing...
Which is kind of related, though.
Some manufacturing prices.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the Purchasing Managers Index.
Mm-hmm.
When large players buy more stuff, it tends to really drive the economy. And we got data for the month of February.
And just a reminder, Purchasing Manager Index kind of covers the production and the cost of goods for the creation of goods.
For the creation of goods.
So it's like a middle ground before the consumers see the final result. So that's how much right. are these companies yeah. buying and how much are they paying that's for right. what they need to that's make right. their products?
That's exactly right. If I want to sell you a candy bar,
right.
I need to first of all buy the chocolate.
Yep.
The peanuts. And the peanut butters. Yep. And anything really goes into it. That's right.
Caramel.
So if I think I'm going to sell a lot more candy bars, then I'm going to buy a lot more chocolate. And if I think I'm going to sell more Band-Aids, then I'm going to buy a lot more of the materials that it...
Adhesive.
And that's right, that it takes plastic. To make the Band-Aids and so on and so forth. So we watch manufacturing prices because guess what? If I have to pay a lot more...
As a maker of these products.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to pay a lot more to make a Band-Aid, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to charge you more for the Band-Aid.
Or make less. And what do you think they're going to do?
Or, well... If you keep buying, then I'll charge you more.
That's right.
That's right. So why is that important? Well, we got the month of February numbers, and the Purchasing Managers Index was up, which on the face of it is a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. But when you look down at all of the things that go into the Purchasing Managers Index, like new orders and the backlog of orders and supplier deliveries, like a lot of that's slowing down. So you ask yourself, then why was the Purchasing Managers Index up? It was up because prices went from 59 to 70.
So if it's the same volume of product material, but it costs more for them, then that the PMI is going to be up.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a 12% increase in prices. So now we ask ourselves, remember, why is that important? So remember, one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. Well, here's the way it works. As a manufacturer, if I'm paying more, then eventually those prices go up, and that's stage one. In the next 60 days, work in progress also rises in cost. So my wholesalers now, people who are moving from me to the distributors, they feel it. And then stage three.
That's us.
Yeah. Stage three is about 6 months later. Then the final goods, the things that you and I are paying for, go up in price.
So we keep an eye on the news.
We think inflation is not finished.
Nope. But we'll report next week on how things are going and what that looks like moving forward.
Trying to have some good news for Joe.
That's right. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Welcome back to Money and Mission, where we're talking about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we have a very special guest with us today. Cody Hobelman. Just say hi, Cody, if you could.
Hey.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, so good to have you. Cody is a financial advisor, and what else do you do, Cody?
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more about an organization that my brother and I started a number of years ago called the Finish Line Pledge.
The Finish Line Pledge.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the big... emphasis really is how much is enough.
That's right.
Yeah. Is that so? Why? I mean, why that question? How much is enough?
I think it is a question that's really easy to go most or all of your life without answering.
Hmm.
But it can be answered. There are a limited number of variables to account for. We do this in our profession. We try to account for all the variables, make some assumptions, but really, it goes to the core concept that God owns everything,
mm-hmm.
and He is the provider of everything that we need and everything that we have.
Right.
So if we can take the perspective of a steward,
mm-hmm.
we are entrusted with whatever God has chosen to give us to manage.
Right.
And some of that is used for us to support our lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is a significance to defining what our lifestyle costs, and we can decouple that from how much we earn.
Yeah.
We might earn income from a variety of different sources, but if we can define what our lifestyle costs, it suddenly allows us to truly take on the perspective of a steward of God's resources. We're going to use some as a manager's fee to cover our cost.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all God's, and he wants us to do more than just live.
Right, right. Yeah, we've been talking over the last several episodes about defining success.
And having that be measurable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, that's kind of exactly what you're talking about here, just having a clear idea of what our costs are, right? But what else goes into it? If we know what our costs are, and I mean, what if there's more available than just what our costs are?
That's really where things actually get exciting. So the core concept behind the finish line pledge, financial finish line, is simply defined as an answer, a quantifiable answer to that question, how much is enough?
Mm-hmm.
And you could rephrase that as, what does my lifestyle cost?
Right.
Let's say this year. So we all have a pretty good idea, if not an exact idea, of how much we earn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have a pretty good idea of what our lifestyle costs. And when you start to examine what kind of a lifestyle we're called to, you can get pretty specific around what that costs. And to the extent that you earn more
right.
than your lifestyle costs, then I think we got to ask the owner what he wants to do, what he wants us to do with the portion that we've already realized that we don't need to spend on ourselves.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, before we really get to that, you know, what happens? I mean, this is probably easier said than done, right? I mean, there's so many feelings and emotions that get wrapped up in wanting more. I mean, enough seems to never quite be enough. My insurance policy is never quite big enough. The dreams I have for retirement seem to grow bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so if I haven't...
There's levels.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So what drives people? What kinds of things happen if that sort of clarity really is not present?
Yeah, well, I can speak from my own experience. Just my entire plan up until a few years ago was to build my kingdom mm-hmm. as big as possible and put as many toys in it as possible
mm-hmm.
with the time that I had.
Mm.
And it was totally focused on me. And mm-hmm. so there was not an answer in my mind of how much is enough.
Mm.
It was how much can you get?
Right.
How much can you build? How much can you grow? And I saw it as mine. I was the owner. It was for the enlargement of my own lifestyle and my own enjoyment. And to the extent that I had more than I need to pay my bills, that's more capacity to pursue travel, whatever activities I found worthy of spending money on. And I'll do some giving too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the drivers behind that are most frequently greed and fear.
Mm-hmm.
And those come out in different ways. So when we do retirement planning, I think it's frequent to kind of brush up on the things that we're afraid of. And some of the most common things are, what if I run out of money? What if I outlive my income sources?
Right.
What about healthcare? What about the things we can't predict?
Mm-hmm. Disability.
And it really goes to putting security and faith in our assets or our income streams to provide.
Mm-hmm.
And the scary part is Matthew 6:24 tells us that you either serve God or money. You can't put all of your security and faith in money and then say you're serving God. There's an issue. There's the conflict there. The flip side is greed. And that's the mindset that I was in of, I deserve it because I worked hard for it. And this is all for me.
Yeah.
And so I call that building my kingdom instead of God's kingdom.
Yeah. So the greed factor is, I mean, that's pretty clear. We can see how that happens. What's the fear factor all about? I mean, certainly being afraid we'll run out of money, right? Being afraid I'll be a burden on somebody else.
Absolutely.
Like my children.
Maybe some folks may not have a younger generation to care for them, so they're worried about not being cared for, so they're hoarding a bunch of money to potentially take care of themselves.
And I think increasingly so, we can all think of an example from our own life where someone has found themselves in a situation that we would really rather not be in.
Mm-hmm.
And we find money or like you said, the power that comes with the ability to purchase whatever it is that we need or want, that in our minds and our hearts provides us a safety blanket, a safety net against finding ourselves in a similar situation.
Yeah, making a determination between what we need and what we want starts getting really fuzzy. It seems like the more we have, the more we
think we need.
That's right. That's right.
But that's not the case.
Mm-hmm. It's so amazingly helpful to have those things written out ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
right? So that there is a plan to help define that.
That's right.
Right. It doesn't take away the feelings, maybe.
No, I'm curious, Cody. What has been the impact of giving away excess income had on your life and on your family, even?
Yeah, it's hard to summarize quickly, but a couple things happened very quickly, and then a couple things I've learned over the years since actually answering that question: how much is enough for my family this year?
Mm-hmm.
We call that an income finish line. There's also a net worth finish line, but we may get to that later. So immediately after defining that, what happened is I felt for the first time peace and contentment when I thought about my own financial situation. And the best analogy I have is that I felt that for really my whole life. I was working my way up to building my resume, taking college courses, taking a path to earn as much income as possible, as soon as possible, accumulate as much as possible without any end in sight. And so I feel like I was on this staircase that just ascends up into the clouds, and you have no idea if there's 10,000 stairs or 100 stairs. You just know you're at the bottom of the staircase.
Mm.
But when you actually define where the top of the staircase is, it takes away the mystery.
That's a good analogy.
And so in my example, I actually set it as a future goal, and I realized I was on step 7 of 10, for example. So it changed the way I thought about the rest of my career, and it made me more open and available to listen to God. If I am very close to having what I need, or if I already have what I need or more than I need, how does that change the way I think about what I pursue in the future, the decisions I make, the things I don't pursue? Because I think it's really easy just to pursue more without thinking about why.
Yeah. I mean, there have been stories throughout the history, even of our country, of places where people just pursued more and more and more. I mean, didn't the Rockefellers have this issue going on where it was just more and more and more?
Absolutely. This is an example that I pointed to. It's a popular quote, but I think it encapsulates this example. John D. Rockefeller, who built a massive empire, one of the richest people to ever live, and has created generational wealth like very few people in the world have ever managed to do, was once interviewed, and the journalist asked him that same question: how much is enough? How much is enough money? Mm. And his famous answer was, just a little bit more.
to which you never quite get there.
That's right.
That's the next step on that stairwell.
Yeah.
Which is
interesting, because no matter how successful you might be, if there's always just a little bit more, then you will always have that feeling of just never quite being adequate, never quite being enough, and so on and so forth. Yeah, which does lead to real problems. Well, we want to hear more about your story, Cody, and how you came to be involved in that, but we want to take a quick break here.
It's time for PA Trivia, PA Trivia.
Last week's trivia was this. In 1859, the world's first successful commercial oil well was drilled in which Pennsylvania town and sparked off the global petroleum industry?
What town was that? Do you know, Joe?
Titusville, I believe.
Titusville.
Ooh, good job,
yeah,
Joe.
Good job.
You're in a steak dinner.
That's right.
Well, the puzzle for this week, for over 40 years, one of York, Pennsylvania's most famous exports was a candy that required its own specialized manufacturing process to get the dark chocolate to mint ratio exactly right. While the factory in York is now gone, the brand name remains a global household staple. Can you name it? So what famous PA export candy, which is now a brand name, remains a global household staple from York, Pennsylvania? Can you name it?
If you think you know the answer, send your answer to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com, and we'll read the correct answer to this puzzle on, or trivia, on next week's show.
Well, we need to take a quick break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Money Emission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where we're talking about finish lines.
That's right.
Right?
Wealth management. We're joined by Cody today.
That's right. Cody Hobelman is our very special guest. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And Cody. Cody didn't know what to do because we just do this, right, every week.
I'm used to them by now.
That's yes. right.
We both are.
That's right, Joe.
That's right. But we've been talking about finish lines, and what an enormous topic to know how much is enough. But how did this sort of start growing on you, Cody? Can you tell us a little bit about your background and you know how you came to be doing what you're doing today with finish lines?
Sure. I'm going to go back a little further. And when I was coming out of high school, like I mentioned earlier, I really just wanted to get as much income as possible and keep as much of that for myself as I could. So I actually pursued a path in medicine. I went in pre-med to University of Maryland.
Oh, wow.
That was a terrible decision. I am not supposed to be a doctor. That became very clear very early on. And I think a lot of people are better off for me not being a doctor. So I was kind of lost because my identity was in my ability to produce income at the time. So I switched into economics thinking this is business related. I'll learn how to work with money. I'll just have the inside track on how to use money to turn it into more money. And I actually really enjoyed the concepts I was learning about the banking system and a little bit about investing. So I started working at a firm working with ultra high net worth families doing financial planning. And I learned a couple really interesting things. One, how to use these tools that I wanted to explore on how to devise a strategy to manage money well, to turn it into more money, to alleviate issues in our lives, to meet our living expenses. And I thought that was really fascinating. But at the same time, when I would sit with families and hear the discussions going on, largely they weren't around money.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
There were some deep relational conversations, and some of them were not pretty. And it left me thinking, I'm not sure I would trade places with this person, even though they've got tens of millions of dollars. They don't seem happy. So I kind of got this inside look very early on that money doesn't necessarily lead to happiness. So
that's
probably saved you a lot of time too to see that early on.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, it's a fascinating observation that somehow, again, what we perceive as being something that will get us what we need leaves us with so many other issues and problems.
That's right.
Right. A lack of peace, et cetera, whatever that might be.
Right. So at the same time, I'm right out of college and I was seeking community. I was living in Baltimore City and I just I knew that I needed to get connected with a church community. Mm. And so that's what I did. I started attending church, and I went to a church that talked about money some. There was a series once a year for 3 or 4 weeks focused around money, and it kind of culminated in, commit to tithing over the next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't want to do that because in my head, I thought if I can learn how to invest really wisely, then I can actually use this money that I would give, mm-hmm. invest it, and I'll have so much more to give later, maybe a lot later. And I actually called my brother, who has kind of been a spiritual mentor since I was very young, and I said, what do you think about this idea? I'm going to invest so that I can give more later.
Mm.
And he said, be careful with that line of thinking, because although you will have a greater capacity to give, you won't have had the benefit of the discipline, the practice throughout time. And there's no guarantee that you will give it. You'll become more attached to it the longer you hang on to it. And this presented a conflict in my mind. So we looked to scripture, and I felt that the obedient path was to begin supporting my local church,
mm-hmm.
even though it set me back on my personal financial goals
mm-hmm.
of accumulation.
Yeah.
And that was a really difficult hurdle for me, but I quickly found that I adjusted to living on 90% of my income within a month or two. It really didn't impact my lifestyle that much at that stage of my career. So that was an interesting kind of second phase. I went from personal kingdom building to now I want to earn more so that I can give more. If I earn an extra $100, that's an extra $10 that I'm giving. I feel good about that. I'm participating in the church community in a new way. But I quickly realized that I still was playing this comparison game, that my friends who earned more than I did,
mm-hmm.
I felt jealous of them. Even people who gave more than I did, I had to say, I gotta go double down and earn more money so that I can have more, give more, do more. And looking back, I can see that I was living that Matthew 6:24 double life of trying to serve God and money, which is the exact thing that Jesus says we can't do.
He didn't say you shouldn't serve God and money. He said you can't.
That's right.
It's
impossible. Try if you want.
It is impossible to do because it's got there's a heart thing that's going on, and it's yeah, wow, that's so enormous, right? If there's nothing else that you take away from our conversation here today, if you're listening to this podcast and if there's nothing else you take away, we hope you take away that little nugget. That it's not like you shouldn't serve God and money. It's that you can't. Mm-hmm. It is not possible.
Right.
Right.
Well, I'm curious, Cody, what are some common misconceptions about giving that people might have besides the, I guess a good one would be, I can't live off 90% of my income. I'm already strapped as it is. You say it's not as tough as you thought it was. What are some other things that you found out weren't really quite what you thought they were going into it?
I think the number one misconception is that giving is a financial matter.
Mm.
It really comes back to, do you trust God to provide for you? Is this something that you prioritize in your life? And when you read scripture, money is talked about more than any other topic.
That's right.
It's been estimated that 2,350 verses pertain to wealth and money. So to me, that sends off a lot of warning signals that you ought to pay attention to this.
Right.
And now
that's
I happen to be in a career where I was focused on money. I was just trying to use it for my own purposes and trying to help other people use it for that same purpose. And it was not rooted in listening to God, reflecting on scripture, trying to understand how do you want me to use your resources that you've entrusted to me to manage. That's a lot of trust that he placed. But there's a significant component in that he has entrusted each of us with the amount of resources that he has because he wants to invite us into what he's doing. And that is one of the things that he has blessed us with, which we can use as a tool, but it can also take that place as the top competitor with God for our hearts.
Yeah. Could you say that again? He has entrusted us with a certain amount of resources because he wants to invite us into what he's doing. That's how you said that, right?
That's right. We serve a God who split the Red Sea in half.
Mm-hmm.
He created the world, the heavens and the earth. He doesn't need U.S. dollars no. to accomplish his will.
Or any other form of currency.
Or commodity dollars.
Commodity dollars.
None of it. He
none,
made it
none
all.
None of it. Any form of money we were just talking about, he does not need any of that.
It kind of goes back to the same concept of when we surrender our lives to Christ, why do we remain here?
Mm-hmm.
Why does he equip us? Why does he continue to give us opportunities, even when we stumble and fall sometimes, to accomplish what? What does he want from us? So money is a very easy thing to focus on because it's so easy to measure. We all use it. We all need it to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
So that as a focus area, plus the importance that is placed on it throughout Scripture, this has been a huge focus of mine. So that's what I mean when I say that giving is really a heart matter rather than a financial matter.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think we're meant to be in relational giving dynamics. And by that, I mean, Scripture says that where your treasure is, there also is your heart.
Mm-hmm.
There's a significance because we do treasure the things that money gives us,
mm-hmm.
the power, the influence, the safety. It's something that we treasure here on earth. So when we place that money in a way that honors God and prioritizes his will, then our hearts are drawn towards that same purpose.
Mm.
So when it's all focused on us, that's where our heart is focused. When it's completely focused on God, we are, that's what I mean when I said I became more open and available to God's instructions.
Yeah. So when you know, when money leaves your checkbook, when it leaves your hands and something changes in your heart, is probably the reason why I've heard sometimes people say God does not need our money, but we badly need to let go of it. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't need our money so badly as we need to let go of it because of what changes in our heart when we do that very thing. And so it doesn't matter, you know, if you have a small income and a small net worth and you're letting go of a penny, which is brown.
Do we want to open this can
no,
of worms
no.
again?
Or a dollar, right? Right.
But you know what? We're none of us are taking it with us.
That's right.
When they put the lid down in the box, you know,
so will your pennies.
Unless the undertaker's lighting your casket with dollar bills, you're not taking it with you.
That's right. But something happens in our heart when we let go of it. That's exactly right.
Yeah, I think it really comes back to generosity. Giving mm-hmm. breaks the power that money has over us. And so the nature of this whole dynamic is what money represents.
Mm-hmm.
The dollars are less important than what it affords us. It's mm-hmm. the security that we can provide for ourselves. That's what we want. We want to be self-made. And mm-hmm. so... when we give that away, we're actually giving away the power. We're giving away, we're saying, I'm not my own God.
Right.
You are my God and I trust you.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's a powerful message.
That's right. That is a huge message. And this has gradually just grown on you. And we want to talk more about what you're doing with that in the last segment. But for now, we do need to take a break. Yep. And you are listening to Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720. Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, AM 720. Oh, WHYF.
That's right.
That's right. I got that backwards. But we are talking with Cody Hobelman today about finish lines. And what a powerful story Cody has and a powerful message. Can you tell us some things, Cody, that you're doing with that story at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. So just to kind of wrap up the second phase I talked about was started tithing. I felt this tension, still comparing myself to others.
Yeah, that's right.
And the financial finish line, defining how much is enough, is what finally set me free of that. And that's what I mean when I say I experienced contentment, and I started discovering purpose, and I started finding capacity to give more than I would have otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And that led my brother and I on this journey of trying to figure out how to take everything that we had learned and everything that we were learning to invite other people into those same perspectives.
Hmm.
And we did not come up with this. This is not a new concept. It's been around, I would argue, an incredibly long time, because if you look at the Israelites in the desert, how much were they supposed to gather? As much as they needed, right? And they couldn't gather more, or else it would rot and cause issues. So that was like the first written finish line that I'm aware of. But it was defined for them. We don't have that luxury. We have to define it for ourselves.
That's right.
We have to answer how much is enough. But we also get to wrestle through that. So on the other side of answering that question for my family with my wife, we started trying to figure out that the finish line pledge is our way of inviting other people along that journey with us.
Mm-hmm.
So the pledge is an action, a step. It invites you into accountability to actually say, I'm going to prioritize God with the way that I manage his resources. And generosity is a major component of that,
right?
Through financial giving. So we started a website, and we started a small group curriculum to start to unpack some of these biblical themes around wealth and giving, and then actually give people all the tools they need to set their own financial finish lines.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we launched the podcast as really a supplement to the small group curriculum, but quickly discovered that we needed to zoom out a little bit and focus on the universal finish line, which I believe is the completion of the Great Commission. Jesus called us to go to every tribe, tongue, and nation and share the gospel and make disciples. And giving is a very direct way that we can participate in that work.
Mm. So there's curriculum that you've put together. Is that curriculum, I mean, can people buy the curriculum? Can they go somewhere to download it? How does that work?
It's available for free. All the resources we've created through the Finish Line Pledge are available for free through our website. So it's finishlinepledge.com, and you can find the Finish Line Sprint program, which is either can be done with a small group, or even with a couple. You don't need a facilitator. It's all available. You can just download it, or you can just pick out individual modules as needed. Mm-hmm. And there's some interactive games. We're always adding new stuff.
Like it'd be good for like a small church group.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've seen dozens of groups go through that curriculum. And then a lot of people just take the component that they may not want to spend a week on budgeting. They might want to focus on some other area. So it's really tailored to the needs of the person using it.
Sure. So finishlinepledge.com.
That's right.
Pledge, P-L-E-D-G-E, like the...
Of allegiance.
Yeah.
Pledge allegiance.
And the furniture polish.
Sorry.
No. Finishlinepledge.com. Sorry. I'll stay on task here. I promise. So people can go to the finishlinepledge.com website. From there, is it easy to sort of go from that website to, say, the podcast as well?
Yep, that's a tab right along the top. Mm-hmm. The podcast is also available pretty much anywhere that you already listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the major podcasting hosting apps. We just crossed 100 episodes. So that's something we've been doing.
Congratulations.
As a way to get more perspectives, because to be honest, there's only so much perspective that two guys who grew up in the same house can have. So we really wanted to invite other perspectives in and learn from people who spent decades really studying different aspects of generosity and giving.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked to pastors, we talked to financial advisors, we talked to organizations that are focused around this message of biblical generosity, the hands and feet of the church in this specific area. And we bring all those perspectives together, and then we try to draw out patterns and all of our learnings and freely make those available to anyone who is interested in learning more.
That's right.
Well, that's and great.
So if we wanted to, you know, maybe snip little pieces of those podcasts and slide them into, you know, money and mission segments here, we could.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome. You know what a studio is now. So, yeah.
That's right. And you know what an amazing engineer Joe is. So, yeah, so you've been doing this now for how long? There's a certain amount of time that's been you're 100, over 100 episodes, but how long did it take you to put those episodes down?
We started in late 2020. That's when we started recording the podcast, and we were focused on the aspect of helping people set financial finish lines, but it's really broadened from there to be a more comprehensive conversation around generosity. So we started weekly. Turns out podcast recording is a lot more work than we bargained. So
that's right.
We actually moved to every other week, and we've been releasing every other Monday since then. So we're about at the 4-year mark.
That's right. So you've talked about, it sounds like personal finish lines. And, you know, I do want to kind of talk about maybe some action steps that people can take to putting some of these finish line concepts in place. But what about businesses? Is it possible to have a business finish line as well? And what would that look like? And that maybe that'll kind of take us into some of those action steps that people can take.
Yeah, it's a really interesting concept. There's a lot of different iterations that I've seen of this just listening to other people's stories. Mm. I will highlight my favorite because it kind of blew my mind when I first heard this thought, this concept. I've now met a handful of different people who have actually, after setting a personal financial finish line, saying how much is enough, they decided as business owners that they would take that amount that they have already decided that they need, and that becomes their salary. And then they've given the business away.
Mm.
And that, I think, really comes from understanding the purpose, that the business is one of the things that they're stewarding, right?
That's right.
So a lot of us have a bank account, maybe an investment account, a retirement account. We've got these different ways that we save, and then we plan to use that money for ourselves in the future. Mm-hmm. But a business is more complex than a retirement account. There's a lot of influence that comes with that, and maybe employees, clients, customers. So there's a lot of different ways to leverage a business to accomplish all kinds of different purposes. But to the extent we're talking about more of a financial conversation,
right?
Some people have chosen to put their business into maybe a donor-advised fund, for example, or some structure like that, where they release ownership of the business. And so when the business is more profitable, that money goes directly to causes that the owner is donor advised. So the donor is advising where the resources are sent. So the business grows. That's more resources for the kingdom. It's a really exciting concept.
Yeah, but doing that, I mean, clearly requires a lot of planning and a lot of good planning. And that's something that maybe we can add as a topic to talk about in other episodes as well. But so that's one way of setting a business finish line and maybe putting that into practice. What if you're just like a professional individual, you're in a career that like it just the top is never quite the top, you know, like how would a doctor, for example, put this into practice, or a real estate agent or a financial advisor?
Yeah. So my brother actually is a surgeon. And one of the ways that he has leveraged a personal financial finish line to answer that question, how much is enough? Because he's in a field where you get paid for doing surgeries. So you can do surgeries all day and night if you want to, and you'll earn a massive income. So he has just said, here's how many surgeries I'm going to do. I'm going to hold time on these days for my family to pursue podcast recordings, whatever it is that God's called us to.
That's right.
And so that actually frees up time. I believe there's an exchange time for money in most, if not all, cases. So to hold time where you could have spent that time earning more money,
mm-hmm.
and instead you pursue something that may or may not earn money in a different kind of focus. That's one way that's expressed. For a real estate agent, how many houses do you need to sell per year? I met someone from, it was a songwriter in Nashville, who said, I could meet my living expenses in 2 months of writing songs. And then I spent 10 months trying to rescue children from trafficking.
Hmm.
Oh, wow.
It's a different mindset.
It's a different mindset.
She could have spent 12 months earning money and she'd have a lot more money, but she wouldn't be able to pursue the cause that God has called her into in the same way.
That's right. So in any walk of life, any vocation, any business, really, it comes down to your vision and really letting that vision grow. In just a few seconds, Cody, because we have not quite a minute left, do you do this cold turkey? I mean, let's say that you haven't been doing this yet. Do you just like, bam, start doing this tomorrow, or do you ease into it? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, I think it's really easy to get analysis paralysis trying to get the exact right number, but it's more important to take that first step out of the boat.
Right.
So we have learned to encourage people to set a finish line and not to overthink it, because most of the learning is done on the other side of that.
Right.
The finish line, in a lot of ways, is the beginning of a journey.
Right.
So we have a lot of resources on our website, and I think finding a financial advisor who's familiar with these concepts as well is a great way to walk down that path.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much. This has truly been a pleasure, and I hope we have an opportunity to have you here on the podcast again at some point in the future.
No, it was really great having you, Cody, and I love the message, and I hope our listeners go on and check it out. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun.
That's right. And remember, a penny is brown. That was from episode 9.
Yeah,
that's it was.
Right.
You can go back and listen to that. Well, you are listening to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio.
WHYF AM 720.
You did that so well. You got the job.